A leadership change that could affect your job.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace Podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Global Perspective on Business and Economics. A fellow from Brazil is expected to get the nod today to run the World Trade Organization. He replaces Pascal Lamy of France. The BBC's economics correspondent Andrew Walker joins us from London. Good morning.
Good morning, David.
The U.S. and Europe are pulling for a Mexican candidate at the top of the WTO, but a longtime diplomat from Brazil gets the job, Roberto Azevedo. What do you see as the significance?
It indicates, I think, that the U.S. and the European Union were perfectly prepared to go along with Mr. Azevedo, but they recognized that there was perhaps some benefit in allowing a candidate who had wider support amongst the WTO's membership. The WTO does try to do everything just about by consensus. They were trying to identify a candidate who would command, at the very least, the acquiescence of all the member states, and that's what we've got.
You might think that watching the WTO might be like watching paint dry or something, but many...
No, it's not nearly that exciting.
It's slow movement forward on policy issues, but many of our jobs depend on it.
Well, in a sense, that's true. I mean, you say slow movement on policy issues. Actually, I think you could describe it as more or less no movement at all on the big policy issue, which has been the negotiations known as the Doha Round, which are intended to provide another big leap forward in global trade liberalisation. It does still matter, though, because there is an existing set of global trade rules, and the WTO has a role in enforcing them. And that does matter because countries do break the rules, and I think most people in business would recognise that it's useful to have some kind of discipline on countries, and the WTO does do that. It's just that it's not really making any discernible progress with taking the trade liberalisation agenda forward.
The BBC's economics correspondent, Andrew Walker. Andrew, thank you.
My pleasure, David.
Will they be the mark of cool or the mark of doofus? It's Google Glass, the wearable computer screen that sits on your brow. It lets you check the web, get text messages. It's raising privacy issues since it's a secret camera. Developers and a select group of early adopters have it, but soon it'll be available to the wider public. And as Marketplace's Queenie Kim reports, there could be trouble.
Google Glass isn't out yet, but the backlash is already spreading. Saturday Night Live mocked the wearable computer on a recent show, and blogs like Jesus Christ Silicon Valley and White Men Wearing Google Glass are making the rounds. Jeff Nunberg is a professor at UC Berkeley's School of Information.
Some people are calling the people who wear them glasshole.
And what does that term mean?
Well, glasshole is a rather rude way of what we could say as the idea that these people are walking around, present physically but mentally and spiritually elsewhere.
Trip Chowdhury is an analyst at Global Equities Research. He says this attitude is making his fellow analysts nervous about Google Glass's commercial viability. But Chowdhury says we're all missing the point.
What Google is doing with Google Glasses is they are seeding the innovation seeds in a completely new space.
Chowdhury says Google Glass could very well fail, but the effort is already sparking a market for wearable computers, and it'll probably lead to technological advances that can be monetized later. In San Francisco, I'm Queenie Kim for Marketplace.
I think we should do the numbers. The FTSE 100 in London is up 0.25% now. The DAX in Germany hit a record high yesterday, and currently it's up 0.5% now.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
Today, the electric car company Tesla Motors is set to announce that it has turned a profit for the first time. Now, that's in part because of the success of its Model S luxury sedan, but Tesla has also made a pile of cash selling California zero-emission vehicle credits to other car companies. Marketplace's David Weinberg has the story.
To understand the complicated world of California's credit system, I thought I would start by visiting a Tesla store in Santa Monica, just a few blocks from the Pacific. Jeremy Snyder is the general manager.
The Tesla store experience is unique because we own all of our own distribution. And unlike dealer franchises, we control the entire experience.
This is the first point in a very long list of ways that Tesla is different from every other car company, Snyder explained. Another, for instance, Tesla keeps only a single car in its showroom, the Model S.
Why don't I drive first? It'll be easier for me to kind of blow your mind first, then I'll have you get in the car.
We drove up the Pacific Coast Highway, and it was kind of mind-blowing. Blue Angel fighter pilots have described it
as the closest thing to an F-18 fighter jet on four wheels.
But perhaps its greatest engineering feat is its range of 300 miles on a single charge. And now the Model S can turn a profit, thanks in part to California's zero-emission vehicle credits.
So the zero-emission vehicle regulation is a requirement that's placed on the large automakers to make and sell zero-emission vehicles.
Annalisa Bevan is with the California Air Resources Board, which requires automakers to turn in a certain number of credits per year. Companies earn those credits by making and selling zero-emission vehicles.
So if a manufacturer has sales in California, let's say 100,000 vehicles, and the obligation is credits equal to, just for an example, 1% of their sales, they have to come up with 1,000 credits.
If a company comes up short, it has to pay a penalty of up to $5,000 per credit. Or it can buy credits from a company like Tesla, which happens to earn a lot of credits on every car it makes. For Tesla, it's sold enough to turn its first profit. I'm David Weinberg for Marketplace.
We are always online at marketplace.org. While there, check out our newsroom blog called By the Numbers. The top one now is about which is the most stressful state of the union. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.